back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 FM Talk. Gina Grad joins us, as well as Dr. Reef. And always nice to see you, Doc. We missed you last week. I guess you were down helping Mom out?
Yeah, I went to Orlando, Florida, and helped my mom to retire there.
Wow, is that right?
Yeah, let me
tell you.
You
couldn't get her any further away, huh?
Yeah, just, you know, it's about, let's see, it was the Keys, Cuba, Orlando.
How about India?
Yeah, India could have worked, too. Orlando has got to be the lamest city I've ever been in my entire life.
I love Orlando.
Do you? Because you have little kids, right? But don't you see it's so fake? It's such an inauthentic city. There is nothing real about that city.
Well, that's where Disney World is, right?
I know. So
there you go.
It's completely conjured up. Everywhere you go, people have nice smiling faces and they're like, I hate this person. I can't stand you. I can't stand. Like, they don't say what they mean.
You know what I love is that like controlled Disney environment. Like they have a community down there that Disney owns. I'd love to live there.
Wow.
It's so clean and orderly and everyone is just, you know, he's got two kids and two cars and the white picket fence.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. Everyone's clean and neat. I love that. I love that kind of like that control. I could move there in a heartbeat.
My mom's house is 3 minutes from Disney.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's beautiful down there.
You can watch the fireworks every day at 8 p.m. outside of our backyard.
Can she see the Magic Castle?
No, but you can see, like, if you could see a little farther, you could. But you can't see it. But
All right, real quick, before we get to some of the calls, the other type of people that I'm not really that thrilled about are people who think it's everybody else but themselves. Like this Governor Blagojevich, right?
Yeah.
He was thrown out of office by a vote of 59-0 by the Illinois State Senate. Right. And he's still saying it's everybody else but him.
Yeah,
is that some kind of mental disease?
Is that your garden variety narcissism?
Yeah, it's called, well, one aspect of it is what Gina's saying. Wait, you could be so narcissistic, you don't see anything except you, and the whole world focuses around you. And they have something called narcissistic injury or narcissistic rejection, where if somebody actually calls them out, like to their face, hardcore, it will be like that person's trying to kill them. It will be such a dramatic, impactful response that the person could lose it, could try to hurt themselves, could run away, could do a million different things. So the narcissism is definitely a part of it. The other aspect of people that do that is it's concrete thinking. It's very fixed concrete thinking. When you're really evolved as a person, you're able to look at another person's viewpoint.
Right?
Like if I know kind of what's up and I'm well developed, I'll be able to look at Tim Conway's viewpoint towards something as well as my own.
Right.
If we're having some major discussion.
Right? But isn't it easier for two guys to do that as opposed to men and women?
No, I think it's a skill that you learn over time. I mean, it depends. If you're talking about sex, then yeah, you're going to be thinking probably differently.
Well, no, but if like one of my buddies or a guy calls me a complete a-hole, and I'm like, ah, F you, dude. You know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I won't do it again, whatever, right? And then it goes away, and they're like, you know, best friends again. But women can almost remember exactly where they were when some guy called them an a-hole. You know, I've been called it so many times that I don't even remember where I was, you know, last time. But if I said to Gina, I said, hey, Gina, I'm not really into like the way you do the news. It seems a little clunky to me. Now, I don't mean that, but even just saying that offhand like that, she'll think about it for probably the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, you realize just doing that right now, she's
whatever
like,
whatever it is you don't like, I'll stop doing it.
Is she crying?
Oh, God.
But that could be devastating. And again, I have no problem. I love the way you do the news.
Thank you.
But that type of thing could be devastating to women. Well, they always say, please tell me the truth. Tell me the truth. Tell me the truth. You tell them the truth.
That.
And they go apex.
Yeah, there's so many differences between men and women this way. But it really comes down to the emotional content that you attach. The attaching emotion to the statement. If you said something to me and you were like, you know, you're a loser. Right? And I didn't really think of it or attach emotion to it.
Right.
I'd be like, hey, so are you. Like, I wouldn't care. Right? I would just be like,
and then
whatever.
I would say, great comeback.
Yeah, nice comeback. Yeah.
But I think for a lot of females, and I know this is definitely something I do, I have like my inner circle. You know, you have your close family and your close friends and your boyfriend maybe. And, you know, everybody else can F off. You know, if somebody I don't know has something negative to say about me, my instinctual reaction is, well, screw you, because I haven't let you into my life in that way that you can actually affect me. Now, if somebody in that inner circle all of a sudden starts voicing their opinion, that I'll take a lot harder than somebody I don't know. Is that typical?
Yeah. So what you're talking about, I believe it's a term I use called emotional armor. And so we all have a certain level of emotional armor. People that are really fragile, that are walking around crying all the time, trying to do great things in the world and feel everybody else's pain, have very little emotional armor.
Right.
And you always try to protect yourself. And then there's some guys out there that they don't care about anything. Right. They just sit around on their couch all day.
Yeah.
And those people probably have a lot of emotional armor. Nothing bothers them. But either way, if there's too little or there's too much, it's a problem. Now, so I think, Gina, what you're saying is your protective emotional state is that armor around the core group of people. And
right.
The only people that can hurt you are within that core.
Right.
Right. And everybody else is kind of...
At arm's distance. And the problem with that is boyfriends in the past have said, well, that's not fair. How come he can say that to you and I can't? And he's being honest and you don't care and I'm being honest and I'm the jerk.
Right.
And I go, well, that's a good point.
Wow.
But I don't have an answer. Wow, I'm glad, a solution.
I'm really glad you said that. But it comes down to adding emotional content,
yeah.
Right? If I think and I add some, because there's a different area of my brain that attaches memories with emotional content than those that are just memories without much of an emotional content.
Right.
That's why if I get trapped in an elevator with Gina and 5 years from now, I'm going to remember that conversation with Gina because we were trapped in an elevator, scared out of our minds if we were going to get out.
Right.
If I talk to Gina right now about some real crazy conversation
Gina,
I won't remember it tomorrow,
yeah. Right.
Let alone 5 years from now.
Yeah, like for me, if somebody says to me, a small example here, if somebody says to me, I'm a terrible driver, right? You go, hey, Conway, you can't drive worth S. You're a terrible driver. That doesn't mean anything to me because I know that's not true, right? But if somebody says to me, hey, you know, you're like a moron that can't spell. I'm like, uh-oh, that sort of hits at home. That hits home because I have like a problem with that because I'm a terrible speller. And I'll even say to my wife sometimes, like, I was on the phone, we were getting our house appraised, and I was writing an email to, Dave Harden, who's, down in Orange County, who's helping me out with the refi. And I said to my wife, I said, hey, sweetheart, how do you spell appraisal? Right? And she goes, are you ever embarrassed? You're embarrassed that you ask kind of like,
embarrassing
you're 45
for you.
Years old and you're asking how to spell appraisal? God, I have no idea. Please, just lay it on me. Don't, you know, have to give me a life lesson here.
Right. Right.
But that's something that's sensitive to me because I'm not very good at it. So as long as if you say something to somebody, like if I say to you, you know, you're a crappy doctor, that doesn't hurt you because you know you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if the truth obviously hurts.
Yeah.
So, but that's interesting. How that,
yeah,
you know.
And like I said, for you, her saying that you're a crappy speller, you add an emotional attachment to that. There's an emotional content to that because you think it's true.
I mean,
you're
sensitive about that.
Yeah, but you know, but I admit I'm the worst. It's not like I try to hide it. You know, I'm terrible. Thank God for spell check and the internet. I don't have to spell anymore. They do it for me.
But we always figure out your code. we translate.
All right, let's take some phone calls here for Dr. Reef. And again, you got yourself a question or a problem going on in sex, drugs, or relationships, then you give us a call here and Dr. Reef will set you straight. By the way, I think the Los Angeles Lakers beat the New York Knicks, so that's a good sign, especially with the injury.
Well, and didn't Kobe just hit a record tonight?
Yeah, Kobe got a record.
60 plus.
Yeah. 60 points. Is that a record?
Big deal.
All right, let's take a phone call or two here. How about Vince in Orange County? You're on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks, guys.
All right, what's happening with you?
I've got somewhat of an embarrassing question for the doctor. I have an addiction to masturbation, more specifically with internet porn, and it's at a minimum of 3 times a day, probably a maximum of 5, and I just cannot kick the habit. And
5 times a day?
Yeah.
You have an addiction yet,
dude.
I know,
it's ridiculous.
You're fine.
my question is, and anything can trigger it. It could be the smallest thing. Sometimes Gina's voice does it for me. I'm not joking.
Oh, my God.
Princess doesn't like that.
No, Princess likes that a lot.
Yeah, Princess loves
it. Oh, yeah. So my question is, how do I break the cycle? I've tried everything I can imagine, and I just cannot get out of the cycle. And it's to the point where sometimes when I'm actually with a girl, I'm not even turned on because I want it to be, you know, the internet porn that I'm so used to.
All right, here's my solution.
Oh, here we go. Real quick, Vince, the way this normally works is that Tim gives you his treatment program first.
Right.
And if that doesn't work for you, I'm going to kick in after, okay? Just want to let you know.
There'll be a huge interruption right before he says something horrible. Dr. Reef here.
Occasionally our philosophies match up.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's pretty rare. I would make your homepage on your computer, a picture of Joy Behar. And every time you're sniffing around internet porn, click on your homepage, and you'll be in the car and off to, you know, do some errands.
I'll go with B. Arthur instead, but I like the sentiment. I like where you're going.
All right, Doc, how does he stop masturbating? You know, is there a patch for it?
There's no patch for it, unfortunately. You know, I actually don't think your idea is a good starter point.
Thank you very much.
Right? I'm going to give you
that. 3 to 5 times a day is not bad, huh?
I think it really depends on functionality. Vince, most people that masturbate excessively or feel like they're masturbating excessively have a specific reason why they're masturbating. It's not just, oh, it's 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, I think I'll masturbate, right?
Elvis Presley masturbated a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
I read that online about the guy.
Must be true.
I looked up celebrities that hit it.
Yeah, it was on TMZ. It's okay. No, but Vince, it's usually there's a reason behind it. It's based on boredom. It's based on anxiety. It's based on a mood change. It's based on not wanting. I had a patient that felt very nervous when he went on dates, and he would masturbate so that he didn't feel any kind of sexual. He was still in recoil time when he was on the date. Now there's different people masturbate for different reasons. The big problem with masturbating to internet porn is you get very used to the stimuli of the porn. You know, if you're looking at porn and it's like 4 chicks all over each other, then suddenly that could become a baseline of what turns you on. And then just a regular woman hanging out with you could be not what you're looking for because you're so used to the internet porn. So changing that baseline of what turns you on is, in my opinion, the hardest thing to treat.
So what do you go cold turkey and just shut the computer?
No, I think the first thing is you find out why you're masturbating. Guys masturbate. I mean, it happens. It's not like if you masturbate, it's the end of the world. Guys do it. That's not
right now. It's almost like a schedule for me. It's like when I wake up, at lunch, when I come home from work,
right?
I hear Gina's voice, it's all these things.
Let me ask you a question here, Vince.
Yeah.
Have you masturbated while you're on this phone call?
Not yet.
Then you're fine, dude. You're fine.
Oh, is that your criteria?
Yeah. Hey, well,
do you masturbate during Tim Conway's show on a regular basis? Well, that's Tim's criteria.
Hold on, we'll find out if everyone just simmers down for a second. Hi, Vince.
Hey,
hi.
Look at that.
How are you?
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good now.
Okay, see, so once on the phone.
Peel one off.
Yeah.
So,
what's the treatment, Doc?
Vince, there's many different ways to treat this. I'm actually curious why you think it's a problem if you masturbate 3 times a day.
Well, see, my problem is, like we were talking about, now when I actually am with a girl, it's almost like she doesn't do it for me, and I, you know...
Like you're desensitized?
Exactly, because it's like you were saying, like 4 hot blondes, double D's, and now I'm with, you know, some chick from the Valley with brown hair or something. It just isn't
Van Nuys.
God
know,
forbid.
A brunette from Van Nuys isn't the same, is it?
Well, go find the hot porn chick then.
That's right. I'm sure Gina could do it for me, but I'm saying regular girls.
I'm not blonde.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I can hear your voice, baby.
Baby.
All right, so what does he do?
Okay, so there's a couple things you can do. The first is, if you really think it's a problem, like legitimately, the masturbation aspect of it itself, I would actually go see a doctor, see a therapist, talk about what you connect to the masturbation. Why do you suddenly go to masturbation versus eating a pizza versus going out and running versus, you know, if you've got something that you want to do and it ends up being masturbation, why? Because you need to know what the connection is with that. If it really becomes a problem, we can prescribe like selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. SSRIs can decrease sex drive. They can cause delayed orgasms. You can have anorgasmia. So
break out the pills.
Yes, you can break out the pills. But I always believe, you know, you try to do the therapy or you try to find out the source before you go to any pills. So I think if he finds a source, and why is it a problem if he masturbates 3 times a day? I want to know more information there.
Wait, but so there's a pill that won't allow you to become sexually excited?
Well, it's just the antidepressants, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, can decrease sex drive and they can delay your orgasm. So for guys that have premature ejaculation,
right,
that are 23, that work in radio and have an issue.
Dare where, you?
I felt that from here.
Did you feel it? I just felt, you know, he was alone. I felt like, you know, he needed to be back.
Well, just because you can't see my hands, you know.
Smoked him.
Yeah.
How long will it delay it? Half hour?
For some people, it's pretty bad. I mean, it's definitively delayed. For other people, it's just mildly delayed. And some people don't have that. It's a side effect. And some people actually don't have the side effect. It just depends. But
yeah, but isn't premature ejaculation only the woman's problem when it comes to sex?
There's guilt, there's shame, there's all sorts of stuff attached.
I mean, the guy is already, you know, he's done. He can go to sleep and, you know, it's her problem then, right? Isn't it?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
Theoretically,
it sounds good, but there's a lot of... Listen, us men, we want to please women, right? And if you look at her after you've had an orgasm, you look at her and she's got this scowl on her face, like you screwed up big time,
right?
You're not feeling good
right then.
Well,
why can't you just say, I'm not very good at it? Well, you know, there's some things you're good at.
Yeah, why can't you just say, I can't stand to see you like this, so I'm going to go in the other room.
Yeah,
I'm gonna watch TV.
Like I'm no good at sex. I'm not good at it, you know, because I'm 45. I'm not in great shape, so I just don't, you know, I'm just not good at it. You know, there's some guys that are good at hockey. There's some guys that are not, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can't get
hockey
down on
sex,
a guy.
You know, whatever.
You can't get down on a guy just because he's naturally not good at it. You know.
Well, Gina, okay, let's.
It's
so much easier for the chicks not to be good at it.
Your wife should be canonized.
So if some guy you're hanging out with
right
tells you the first time you're gonna have sex with him, by the way, I'm a premature ejaculator, this is probably gonna last about 2 minutes,
right?
I mean, because he told you and he warned you, you can't be mad at him.
Well, here's my sickness. Yeah, if he says
sorry,
I'm
I think it's a huge compliment to women.
Why?
if a guy is premature.
Yeah.
He's like, man, I was so excited about you, it lasted 2 minutes.
One time. Well,
you don't think that's that's a huge compliment?
One time. Yeah.
And what, the next time he's got, that's why guys masturbate instead of trying to please you, because you can never know it.
Oh God.
Never please these women.
Yeah.
It's impossible. All right, Sophie in Glendale, you're on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you?
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Right.
What's
on.
Up, Sophia?
My question is that I'm an alcoholic. I have been for the past, 3 years, but I've been sober for a year, January 17th, just this past January 17th. And I didn't go the AA route. I sort of just took it upon myself to just get myself really healthy and through diet and tons of exercise. And
do you feel better?
I feel amazing. Like, I just feel like my whole life just sort of came back together and just really present, you know, kind of did a lot of research on it and everything. But I also feel like I've heard that I'm kind of considered a dry drunk. And if you recommend that I do go to AA and sort of, I don't know. Maybe
a dry drunk. I can't stand that effing term.
I've never heard that before.
It kind of rubbed me the wrong way, too, when I first heard it.
Yeah, why don't you tell them to go F themselves?
Yeah, what a slap in the face for everything you've done.
Yeah, it's like you're like a really, really poor rich person.
That's me.
You know, I mean, Jesus Christ.
So,
wow.
So the concept of, Sophia, of a dry drunk, that where the term comes from, is essentially either somebody who's not in the sober community. That's one way of looking at it. But I, in my opinion, what it is somebody who's actually not drinking but hasn't done the work to get rid of the behaviors associated with the drinking. So it might be the shame, the lying, the manipulation, the interpersonal problems with their family, all that kind of stuff.
But she's done it without,
she
stopped smoking without the patch.
Yeah, here's my point. My point is that it's about changing the behaviors. It's not about how you change those behaviors.
Oh, I see, right.
So if you were able to change those behaviors without being in the community, then you've done the work. Now, what that means, though, is that if you have triggers or cravings, or, you know, you pass by a liquor store one day after you've had a bad day and you actually start thinking about it, you better jump into the sober community, because it's a great resource for people that are alcoholics. But if you're able to do the work and do what you have to do through therapy or through diet or exercise or whatever else, then more power to you. I think that's great.
Hey, do you have cravings at all?
No, I don't. I mean, the whole idea to me of drinking just makes
How much
me
did you drink when you were drinking?
I was like a functioning alcoholic, so I probably drank like a quarter to a half a bottle of vodka every day.
And what time did you start?
In the afternoon. I'm in the entertainment business. Yeah, right. So,
do you know her?
You know, I could,
nah, but it sounds like everybody else in the entertainment business.
Right. And so it was kind of easy to be, you know, functioning and everything. I actually pulled myself out of it, you know, last year to just sort of really focus
Good
on
for
myself.
You. Now, what are you an actress?
I'm really not sure.
Of sorts.
Oh, I see.
I'm getting
okay.
the vibe.
All right.
How entertaining was this business? No, I do you think that the kind of work you were doing sort of...
I'm a singer.
Oh, okay.
So do you think that community facilitated, like, you know, drinking lots
of bars
and
stuff?
You know, it's really funny. I mean, now that I kind of understand, like, where I turned, I mean, I kind of went through a lot of, like, crisis stuff that happened, like, all through my life. And I never was a drinker or anything. I wasn't really the one going out and partying with, you know, everyone and stuff. Occasionally, socially, you know, and have, like, a bender like everybody else. But just a whole bunch of stuff happened, like, one thing on top of the other. And I guess I know that I was just really numbing it and then finding, oh, I'm feeling really great all the time and just sort of have to ignore all of this. Like, I was engaged and he was gay and kind of a mess. You know?
I'm sorry, but I told you to stop calling me, Sophia. Hey, so when did you find out the guy you were engaged to was gay?
Well, gay porn was coming up.
Oh, man.
And you know what? I mean, in the entertainment business, you know, everyone just sort of believed.
Did you approach him on it?
Oh, yeah. It was just a big issue. And, like, you know, trying to work through that, and he just really didn't. And that's when I started, you know, drinking. And when I look back on it, it's like... alcohol had played such a trick on my mind.
Is it sad that he's not in your life every night, but yet you can still hear him on the radios Monday from 9 to 11?
It's not setting off a trigger at all.
All right, baby. Well, at least it looks like you got your life together.
Hey.
You know, you make everyone, all this other alcoholics feel like a-holes.
Stop it.
Yeah. Wow.
It sounds like what she's saying is, I did this on my own. I feel really good about it. But now there are people out there that are making me feel bad. I agree with them?
I went to AA. Like, I really made a decision that I'm going to do it. Even though I was feeling really great, like, I made all these amazing changes. And I know that the stuff that I take away from this, like, I'll keep it for the rest of my life. Because I feel better than I did, you know, 10 years ago.
Hey, was the guy you were engaged to, he turned out to be gay.
Here we go.
Was, how often did you have sex with a guy?
All the time. Mm.
And when he came out, did he come out of the closet, or did you never?
No. He found a Brazilian girl.
Oh, I see.
Ooh.
Found a Brazilian girl. They're married.
But you know, maybe he wasn't gay.
You know, I mean,
maybe he's just Brazilian.
You know, maybe that's a great way to get out of a marriage or an engagement. Well, yeah, I'd love to marry you, baby. But I'm gonna
stick. I actually call her Anita. I need a green card.
Hey-o. Oh, man.
Stealing that.
Come on.
Wow.
All right. Thank you, Sophia. But take care of yourself.
Wow.
But that's, you know, I don't think the guy was gay. I think, you know, I bet guys do that all the time. You know, they're looking, they don't want to break the girl's heart. They don't want to say, listen, I, you know, they can't say, I don't want to get married to you. So, like, yeah, I'll throw a couple of gay mags around the house, look up a little gay porn. And all of a sudden, she runs for the hills, and, you know, then he whips out the good stuff.
Huh. Yeah.
Does that ever happen? I bet it does.
I bet you it does happen. And to be honest, it's an interesting way to get out of a relationship. It's a very, you know, you got to work kind of hard. You got to, you know, go to the porn shop, the gay porn shop, and pick up a mag.
Gotta get you know, hit that stick once in a while. Here's something that's going to probably bother you, Doc, because you're a real professional. But I know a guy in the entertainment business who pays his therapist extra money. So when he comes in with his girlfriend or his fiance, he'll tell them that they're not good together.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
He'll do that?
Yeah.
Therapist is like, okay.
Yeah, he gives the therapist an extra bone or two and say, hey, do me a favor. When I come in today with Gail, tell us that we're a terrible couple.
Awesome therapist.
Yeah, because she's going to feel better if she knows that we shouldn't be together.
So what happens? Does he do this with all these different women?
He does with almost every chick he's ever been with.
Wow.
So yeah. He's got this whole commitment phobia.
He says, we're having problems. He says, let's go see my therapist. The therapist is already paid off. And the therapist will, after like a couple of sessions, go, you know what? You guys are just not perfect for each other. You should break up. It's not working out.
Well, see, the first red flag, and your female listeners should you know, be aware of this, is anytime the guy says, let's go get couples therapy.
Right.
I know this great therapist. You know, generally, that's the
red
first
flag.
Red flag. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's ingenious, though, man.
Well, it's interesting because he can show his commitment-phobic way without actually discussing it.
Right, but is that also
somebody else?
Is that also something that would get a doctor disbarred? Or not disbarred, but what do they call it? Doctor business.
Yeah, I mean,
it depends
if it was a medical doctor. Then you've got a medical board. You know, with the psychologist, you've got a board for psychologists. Then for therapists, they belong to, you know, an organization as well. So
but you'd have to prove that he was doing that.
Yeah, you'd have to. How would they show that?
Yeah. Well, and if that doesn't work, does he ever pay him extra to break out that prescription pad? Just numb her out a little bit?
Yeah. No, but I think it's
an extra bone. Can you give me some Xanax for her, maybe?
Hey, if any guy's listening right now, I'm sure they're thinking about it, you know? Pay that therapist to bust you up. All right, we got to take a break here. If you have a question for the doctor here, Dr. Reif is with us, an addictionologist dealing with sex, drugs, and relationships. And this guy has all the answers, man. Look at this. 520-9710. That's 520-9710. And 888-520-9710. And again, you can check out his website. It's drreif.com, and doctor is spelled out. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, drreef.com. Dr. Reef, R-E-E-F.com. Gina Grad stays with us here. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 FM Talk. And Dr. Reif is with us, also Gina Grad. And you got yourself a problem. It's always nice to talk to a third party like Dr. Reif, man, who is what do they call him, a disinterested third party? Is that right?
He's
pretty interested.
I'm pretty interested.
Impartial.
Impartial third party.
There you go.
All right, let's talk to Andrew in Hollywood. You're on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you?
Good. How you guys doing?
All right, what's going on with you?
Not much. Dr. Reif, good to speak to you.
Hey, what's up, Andrew?
About 4 or 5 months ago, my mom passed away. She had Lou Gehrig's disease.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah, she had about a 5-year battle with it.
Were you close with her?
I wasn't.
Sure.
So, and when she passed away, I wasn't too shocked because I knew it was coming. I did start to get a little depressed just in the past maybe 2 months, and I do have a history of depression. Started going to therapy for it, and the topic of my drinking came up with my therapist, and she came to the conclusion that I was an alcoholic, but I kind of disagree with that.
How often do you drink?
You know, I drink, well, yesterday in the Super Bowl, I had a couple Jello shots.
How dare you?
You
should get into an in-house therapy. You should be out to Promises.
Yeah.
What are you doing on the phone?
Yeah.
You had a couple of shots, right?
Took about 3 Jello shots.
Jello shots.
That's fine.
Part of that, maybe.
Your daughter
like
can take those.
Now let's ask Dr. Reif here. Some people are really strict with this. And we took a questionnaire last week, 20 questions. If you answer yes to 3 or more, you're an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were real lightweight. You know, I mean, I answered yes to all of them.
Like early morning drinking.
Early morning drinking. Do you ever regret drinking? Do you ever black out when you drink? I'm like, of course you do. I mean, that's why, if you haven't blacked out, you haven't reached your max then.
And I don't drink, and I was told to seek professional help by this quiz.
Yeah, Gina has had 5 drinks in 5 years.
What quiz was this?
We gotta find out.
About.com.
No, it was from the Chicago
Journal of Medicine.
Oh. Wow. All right, so...
I'd have to see the quiz, but yeah, go
ahead. Are there different... is there a standard definition in the medical world what an alcoholic is?
Well, there's alcohol abuse and alcohol dependence, right? Right. So it really comes down to substance abuse and substance dependence. Substance abuse, you use under hazardous conditions. There could be legal implications associated with you. So let's say you got a DUI.
Right.
Right. Let's say you were a truck driver and you were a cab driver and you were drinking while you were driving. There are interpersonal problems associated with the drinking, like your wife hates you because you drank, or you get in fights because you drank, or whatever. That's abuse.
How about your wife hates you when you don't drink?
Oh, well, see, that's an interesting one, right?
Yeah, that'd be great.
And dependence is when you add tolerance to the mix. So you need more and more drinks to get the same desired effect. You add withdrawal symptoms where you withdraw from the substance, whatever it is, alcohol or anything else.
What are some withdrawal symptoms?
You can get shaky, you can get anxious, you can have kind of sleep dysfunction, you could...
kind of edgy.
Yeah, you're very edgy. Some people describe it as kind of feeling like you want to jump out of your skin a little bit.
Thank God. I thought I was an alcoholic. None of that stuff.
But you know, with Andrew, I think what's... I'm going to try to channel your therapist for a second here. And in doing that, I think the fact you have a history of depression, the fact that you may or may not have totally grieved after the loss that you had, perhaps because alcohol is a central nervous system depressant, your therapist thinks that you're masking a lot of the emotional stuff, a lot of that emotional pain that you have from your mom or from whatever else, through the drinking. And the only way that you can really heal from a lot of the stuff that was causing you to get depressed is by getting rid of the drinking, for now at least, going through the healing process and seeing how you do. So it sounds almost like perhaps the drinking is getting in the way of you being able to heal from the stuff that you got going on with your depression.
What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, it is true. I feel like crap after I drink. It doesn't, I used to, be happy. I used to be a really happy drunk, but now I'll have a couple glasses of wine and I'll stop because I feel even worse than I did before. So.
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, so I mean, Andrew, the real way to deal with this and to deal with the depression is to initially cut out the drinking. I mean, the fact of the matter is the liver detoxifies the alcohol. The liver detoxifies some of the medications if you end up on meds. You know, it's just easier to cut out the drinking while you're going through this whole process. And then if you're going to readdress it later, you'll see. And if your mood changes and you get really bummed out when you drink, then you know you can't drink anymore.
All right, Andrew, thank you for calling. Now, let's say somebody, and I don't know if this is, I'm sure this happened to a lot of listeners, but let's say your father was very abusive. He used to, hit the kids. He cheated on your mom. He couldn't stand having kids. He became very distant. And then your dad dies, and you have no emotion over that. Is that something you should seek therapy for?
So you didn't have a good relationship with your dad?
Or let's say it's even your mom. Let's say your mom was a complete a-hole. She didn't like having kids. She ended up marrying somebody else, didn't want to have anything to do with her kids, and she dies, and you have like no emotion over her dying. Is that a problem?
I think even if your parents aren't that close to you, just the fact that you idealize your parents when you're growing up.
Right.
I mean, we do that. Our kids all do that. You idealize your parents. You die if your parents weren't around. Right. So there's this whole process of maturation and child development where you idealize your parents. And even if you don't get along with them when you're an adult, you're going to feel something at some point. You might be hiding what you're feeling. You might be repressing it. But at some point in time, maybe it'll be 10 years from then. Maybe it'll be on your mom's birthday 15 years after she died. But at some point, there will be some element of grieving.
Right. And because at some point that may happen, should you seek like preemptive therapy?
I think that if the therapy is going to be based on when you're ready to receive the therapy.
Right. So wait till you break down and then get the therapy.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can try preemptive if you're ready for it. But if you're like, you know what? I don't feel anything. I'm numb. I don't feel anything. You just go see a therapist, see what happens. But you're not going to really feel it till you're ready to feel it.
Yeah, but that's sort of like paying a body shop, $50 a week, thinking you might get in a car wreck one day.
Yeah, you have a pure stimulus. It's not like you're totally preventing. It's not preventative because the death
it already
happened.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So the death happened. It is going to affect you. It's a matter of...
Of how much it'll affect you?
How bad is it going to affect me? What are my life circumstances? What is my emotional armor about doing that? About, you know, feeling it? And I always think therapy is a good thing. I know, you know, sometimes it gets a stigma or whatever else. But anytime you're kind of figuring out how you operate, I think it's a good thing. So... Where I'm saying here is that let's say you're not ready for the therapy.
Right.
Let's say you're like, you know what? I'm numb. And every time I come into this office and I do therapy with you, I'm still numb. I still don't feel anything. Well, maybe it's not the right time.
Yeah,
well, I'm just wondering, doctor, if I've heard before, I don't know if this is real advice or not, but I've heard sometimes they say you should mourn the relationship, the loss of the relationship you should have had. And I don't know if that makes sense or if that's a real thing.
That's possible. I mean, that's interesting.
You know, they say, well, you know, he was a total a-hole to me my entire life. You know, he hated having kids, blah, blah, blah. They say, well, you know, try imagining the relationship you should have had with that person and mourn that, because obviously it's not, you're not going to get too far with the reality of the situation.
Yeah. I mean, I try to live in reality, but with my patients, but if somebody is going to have an easier process, in grieving by idealizing their parent more or thinking better of their parent.
Right.
If that's going to help them initially, I'll usually, you know, I might go along with it and then infuse reality along the way later.
Right. All right. Dr. Reif is with us, also a Gina grad. And here's my mom died in 2005. And, you know, obviously I was a little emotional over it, but I wasn't so emotional over the fact that I lost my mom as my brothers and my sister lost their mother, you know, because they were closer to her than I was.
Okay.
And so I felt bad that my sister and my brothers lost their mom, but I didn't really feel devastated because my mom was a ball buster. She was, a wildly angry, aggressive person to me and to a lot of other people. And I didn't find that so thrilling growing up. But I, where I do not miss my mom, but where I'm sort of sad in seeing my daughter, and not that my daughter would have ever warmed up to that woman, my mom.
Wow, you called her that woman?
Yeah. Well, was a little crazy. But I look at my daughter and I go, well, my daughter's 3.5 years old. She's a very innocent, happy young girl. I bet my mother was the same way when she was 3.5, and something happened to her along the way. I hope it doesn't happen to my daughter. But I think that, you know, that I look back at my mom's life and say, well, you know, I wish I'd have known her when she was 3.5 and happy, because I never knew my mom when she was happy. I never remember my mom once, like, sitting on the carpet with us and playing, like, a board game or ever holding us and saying, I love you. She was more like, you know, I can't stand you, mother effers. I wish I never had you, sons of bitches. And that is wearing on a 10-year-old, especially when you're trying to, like, make friends and stuff like that. Your mom starts yelling at your friends. You know, totally. it's real tough to do. So again, I didn't really, I grieved for her death. It was, again, just for my brothers and my sister. And I thought, well, maybe 10 years from now, I'll break down over the whole thing. Is that possible?
Absolutely.
Oh, Christ.
you have that to look forward to.
Perhaps it was
she's still killing me, huh?
Yeah.
Still beating me down, this woman.
Perhaps it's a lot easier to mourn her loss through your brothers, brother and sister, because they were closer.
Right.
And for you, listen, if you're 10 and she's saying that stuff to you, at some point you're going to put up a wall because you're going to protect yourself. Because it's not easy to hear that stuff when you're, you know, when you're young. So you put up this wall. The wall stays up. The wall's up maybe now.
But, you know, she was so manipulative because when my dad was around, she acted like a totally different person. But when my dad wasn't around, man, this woman,
she went off.
Oh, she would, she'd come back from playing bridge. She played bridge in North Hollywood, like every, I don't know, Thursday and Friday night. And she'd come back from playing bridge and you always knew how she did.
She beat you with a belt.
Well, she didn't beat us with a belt then, but she would wake us up at like 2 a.m. and go, God damn it, you guys left the yard. All your toys are in the yard. Get down there and police the yard. That was her term. Police the yard.
Oh, Lord.
So, like 12 years old, we're going down in our t-shirts and our underwear outside to clean up the toys and put all the toys away.
Joan Crawford's house.
Yeah.
So you guys must have been terrified every time she came home.
Oh, shoot, it was the worst.
Because you didn't know what was going to happen.
It was so great.
You hear that door, that garage door open, that's the worst.
You had no idea what mood this lady was going to be in.
Oh.
And you know what? It was never good. I don't remember ever her, except when she had parties and she would put on like a Like a fake, yeah, sort of.
Is that the worst?
This is something she would do all the time. She'd be, you know, yelling at my brother Patrick or Corey or myself, you know, God damn it, Patrick, I hate you, you mother F, you know, just swearing, you son of a bitch, I wish I never had you. Then the phone would ring and you'd hear her go, hello?
Yeah.
Oh, so hi, bad. Doug, how are you?
Oh, please do the one where they walk by the window.
Oh, yeah.
This is the best.
Yeah, she'd be yelling at us, you know, just going ape-ass. You know, God damn it, who left the peanut butter and jelly out of here? And was throwing things around and grabbing us. And then somebody, take a bicycle and drive across, the front of our house. And she'd be like, woo!
Yoo-hoo!
Brad, you! Like, oh, what a phony woman
the,
this
the
is.
The person here. Stops, like, you know, gets to the other side of the block, and she's, like, smacking
But it. She knew how to hold it together around, like, strangers. And then, you know, the worst was when she would, like, when we'd get in trouble in a store, and somebody would say, hey, you know, that's not a way to treat your kids, like, in the store, like, you know, like Jolly Rogers, a restaurant or something. And then the ass-kicking and the yelling that would go on in the car once she got us alone would be unbelievable.
Wow.
And it was just, she was a mess. I mean, you know what it was? She suffered from massive depression. And that sort of, you know, was displayed and reared its ugly head in the raw anger she had for everybody.
When people hear depression, they think lack of motivation, sad, just kind of laying around and not having the energy to be, you know, like that, like how
that
she was.
Vicious.
She had more energy than anybody in the world.
Yeah, but there's two elements there. One is, you know, maybe she wasn't depressed. Maybe she was actually bipolar in some way and she had manic energy. But the other is you can have irritable depression. You can have depression where there's a lot of rage and irritability associated with the depression. And people don't realize that. They think a depression is, you know, laying
all
on
staying
the couch
in
and
bed
doing
and
nothing. Yeah.
And there's a term, like, is it called ID, irritable depression?
No, it's just within the confines of depression, within that classification, you could have irritable depression.
So that kind of raw anger could be just radical depression.
Could have been just a mood instability with depression and
God, I wish mood stabilizers and antidepressants were around when I was a kid, man.
Yeah.
I would have loaded up.
You would have put it in her oatmeal.
Right, exactly.
Whatever.
And whatever she didn't finish, you'd pop one.
Yeah.
All right, let's
do one for me.
Yes. All right, let's talk to Mark here in Corona. You're on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How you doing, Dr. Reed?
Hey, what's up, Mark? How are you?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Tim. But anyway, I was just wondering about ketamine, if you'd heard anything about that. I heard that it's a sort of like an instant helper for depression. You don't have to experiment as much. I know it's illegal now, but, I mean, I hear they're working on it.
Isn't that the famous horse tranquilizer?
Yeah, that's an animal tranquilizer.
What is the quickest antidepressant? When it'll work via the fastest?
Well,
it's not like 3 weeks or 4 weeks. It's like 2 hours.
There is no such thing.
Ah, hell.
Yeah, but I mean, if you want to invent something, you could
do that.
Let's get your dad back on the boards and have him come up with something.
You don't think that Wellbutrin falls in that category? No, that's pretty fast acting.
I think you have short-acting medications and you have long-acting. Like Prozac is by far the most long-acting. You have short-acting ones like Effexor.
Like vodka.
Yeah, separate than that. But you have short-acting antidepressants, but just because they get in your system, in and out of your system shorter, in a shorter amount of time from a frequency perspective, does not mean that it doesn't still take, you know, 4 to 6 to 8 weeks to really reach its initial peak effect. It's still going to take a while. But what a lot of patients will say to me is that the anxiety effect, the releasing of the anxiety effect, takes place pretty quickly. It takes place in the first couple days to first couple weeks.
Right.
But the mood changes they get may take 3 to 6 to 8 weeks.
So then how does that work in relation to ketamine?
So, well, ketamine is are you thinking, hey, just real quick, Mark, are you thinking about using it for depression or are you thinking about using it for something else?
No. It's actually, I've read some recent research on it. I wouldn't use it illegally, no way.
Is it for you or your horse?
I've seen what it does to people illegally when they do use it that way. But
Table.
I hear that they're refining it down. You know, I hear that they're, you know, I hear that it does, because I've tried some of the other ones in the past and it was just experimentation wasn't for me. But there's something that, you know, I was just wondering what you knew about the research. So,
yeah, I mean, the research generally is as an anesthetic. But,
yeah.
I mean, people have had pretty bad hallucinations on it. And it definitely increases your heart rate, your blood pressure. If you have any kind of cardiac history, you don't want to be on it. And yeah, anyone who's done ketamine recreationally will say how they try to avoid a K-hole at all costs.
What is a K-hole?
Right? So it's kind of like an out-of-body experience mixed in with like the worst feeling ever, right? It's yeah. a mood change, anxious change, out-of-body experience that you don't want to be a part of.
Mm.
And it's kind of forced upon you. And
how long does it last?
Anybody who's had a K-hole will freak.
That should be the name of this show.
What, K-hole?
K-hole.
It's not the A-hole, it's the K-hole
show. How long does that K-hole experience last?
Yeah, it depends on the person. It depends on
could
how
it
much
be weeks?
You take it. No, no, no.
Well,
no.
And it's one of those things where you might, you know, it might actually be 5 minutes, but as far as you're concerned, it's 5 weeks.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true, Gina.
Have you been a K? Have you
time perception changes.
Experience it?
I know people.
Yeah.
I went to college.
Well,
you know,
I did too.
I've
I didn't know
things.
Any K-holes.
Oh.
Plenty of A-holes, but
yeah.
no K-holes.
I saw a lot of K-holes.
All right, Dr. Reif, we thank you very much. Go to Dr. Reif's website, drreif.com, drreef.com, and get yourself some help out there if you need it. And especially if you hate your life, you know, that's time to call Dr. Reif.
Yeah.
Didn't that suck when, you know, it's like the people who come to you, they come to you at the like the lowest point in their life as opposed to like, hey, I'm the happiest I've ever been. How you doing? Nice to see you. Let yeah. me hire you.
But I'll tell you what, I really feel like having the opportunity to help people to change their lives, especially when they come back and they tell me like the stuff we did really helped them. It's a cool feeling.
Have you ever looked at somebody and go, listen, you've been here for 3 weeks. There's no help for you. You're a lost case. Get out of here.
It'd be hard for me to say that, but
see, I'd love
keep
to
a
be
straight
there.
Face.
Would you?
I'd be there. You
yeah.
call me. I'll tell the guy.
Yeah, Joey Behar darts is our right. working point.
Right? All right, Dr. Reif, thank you very much. And Gina Grant, thank you. It
thank
is the
you.
Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 FM Talk.
This is the Tim Conway Jr. Show.
I said it, man.
On 97.1 FM Talk.
Party people unite. Turn it down. Turn it down. All right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 FM Talk. Joining us in the John and Jeff Show are the two studs, John and Jeff. Nice to see you, fellas.
Tim, how's it going?
How you doing, Tim? Hey, just hanging out, enjoying myself here. What's going on with that big show tonight?
We're
going
to talk about Spirit Airlines. They're having some controversial ads, including double D's.
Oh, my.
Whoa.
And MILF. They're using double D's and MILF in their advertising campaign, and we'll translate that for you.
Yes.
I don't think you need to translate it for me. And that's wild.
And a lot of the flight attendants are not very happy. I wonder why.
I know. You know, I thought it was amazing that yesterday when that Skullenberg, you know, the guy, the pilot who saved all those people on US Air 1549.
Yeah.
And that they tried him out in the Super Bowl. I thought, oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
And the co-pilot. But the stewardesses?
And they went down the line. It was like the pilot, Scully, the co-pilot.
Yeah, what were
and
they doing?
A couple of the flight attendants. It's like, oh, I served a Coke before the crash.
You know, it'd be funny if they had a sense of humor. They'd have all walked out with the life vests on.
Yeah.
Those yellow life vests blowing into the collar. All right, John and Jeff coming up immediately here on 97.1 FM Talk. I'll be on tomorrow right after Tom Likas. You're listening to the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 FM Talk.
Another one was electrocution.
How'd that happen?
Working at Mayor K building in Anaheim, and the landscapers bypassed the meter. So I shut all the breakers off. I snipped into the wire, and it sucked me up into the T-bar ceiling like a Captain Nemo.
It sucked you up into the ceiling?
Yeah. I was running onto a cold water pipe. It just took me right off the ladder, elevated me, and the whole building was black. But every time I touched something, it would go kaboom and light the whole ceiling up. And the carpenter would just go, there he is. There he goes. He's coming out of the ceiling again. And then finally, it let me go because I was dead.
KLSX HD, Los Angeles. The home of the Adam Carolla Show morning with Frosty, Heidi, and Frank midday. Where Tom Likas drives you home afternoons. On air at 97.1. Online at 97.1. FMTalk.com.